This is Alternative Visions. All right, the news today and the topic today is the Federal Reserve. It's going to raise rates. Will that have anything to do with inflation? What will it have to do with? Okay. You know, about 3 weeks ago, all of a sudden, the Fed was really talking about, well, they're going to raise rates. They crossed the kind of a policy Rubicon, and they said they were going to raise rates starting in March. That's only a couple of weeks away. And then the question became, well, how much are they going to raise rates? Everyone started talking about at least four times this year before the end of 2022, and probably 0.25%. In other words, it was going to do it cautiously. And then about a week later, it was, oh, no, it's going to be 5 increases. And then they said, well, you know, it's likely it's going to be 0.5% increase initially here in March instead of just 0.25%. And then yesterday, it was reported that Goldman Sachs, the investment company, investment bank, pretty much in control of policy here on the, for years when it comes to banking. Goldman Sachs says, no, it's going to be 7 times this year, almost every month, and we may even see it before the next Fed meeting beginning here in March. In other words, there may be a special meeting of the Fed to start hiking rates. So 7 times they're going to raise rates, according to Goldman Sachs, possibly more than 0.25% each time. Why? Oh, the answer is the Fed's going to stop this inflation going on. You know, last fall, when it began to erupt, yeah, inflation just began to really start taking off around last August. And I'm talking about the consumer price index inflation. You know, there's various indexes that reflect inflation. One is the CPI. You hear a lot about that, consumer price index. Others are the PCE, personal consumption expenditure. Then the GDP deflator price indexes. And then wholesale prices, producer prices. There's all kind of indexes. But usually what you get in the media is inflation reflecting the CPI. We just got that report the other day, and it said 7.5% increase in the last 12 months, going up. You know, it started at 5-6% last August, and then it kept creeping up, creeping up. Biden was saying, oh, it's going to be over here temporarily last year. Oh, it's only temporary. Yeah, well, it's not temporary. It's continuing, and it's actually accelerating. And actually, it's more than 7.5%. For reasons I've talked about before, it's probably about 10%. Consumer price is about 10%. For reasons I'm not going to get into, just listen to a couple shows ago here. Well, more than a couple, where I talked about, you know, the causes of inflation and what the actual level is and why government statistics lowball the inflation. It's about 10%. Okay. So 10% inflation, oh, it's going to be temporary, Biden said last year. Oh, so did the Fed. Fed Chairman Powell said, oh, it's going to be temporary. Oh, it's supply chain, and this supply chain problem is going to correct itself in a few months. Well, it didn't, did it? And here we are in February, almost March, and it's still accelerating. 6-8 months later. And it's going to continue. Maybe not accelerating, but chronic. You see, what's happened here in the post-COVID impact on the global economy is we have some fundamental changes in the structure of capitalism, both in the labor markets. You know, I talked about that last fall, the great strike of 2021. Withdrawing labor, and in the product markets, reflected most by the supply chain problems. But, you know, they talk about supply chain and talk about really manufactured goods coming into the ports. Well, not all the ports are clogged. know. But there are supply chain problems here domestically. They have nothing to do with the ports. You know, the ports bring in discrete goods, manufactured goods. You know, mostly discrete products, and maybe some agriculture, and maybe you know, some other some services, etc. Yeah, well, you know, manufacturing is only 12% of the whole GDP U.S. economy. 12%, that's all. And only part of that 12% represents goods coming in from offshore. Maybe 3 or 4% of GDP, that's all. And inflation rate here? I don't think so. There's other forces at work here driving inflation. Well, yeah, global supply chain, you know. I mean, China, a lot of this stuff is produced in China. You know, and China's shutting down whole cities here to deal with its zero COVID policy. Shipping companies, you know, took a lot of the shipping offline. A lot of container ships, they shut them down in 2020, mothballed them. Now we got a shortage. And they like the shortage, you know, because, look, if I can make profits by raising prices instead of selling more goods, well, then I'm going to do it because my costs are less. My costs of production are less if I make my profits by raising prices. And that's what they're doing here, shipping companies. They, you know, they're in no hurry to bring a lot of these container ships online. I mean, they're charging 4 or 5, 6, 10% for a container, what they used to... Yeah, okay, so, and we got some problems in the ports. You know, the problem is not so much unloading the stuff in the ports. The problem is, where are we getting 18-wheel truckers to take it from the ports to the warehouses? Big shortage of truckers. Well, why do we have such a shortage of truckers? Because you can't make money as a trucker, independent trucker anymore. With the price of gas going through the roof, you can't make money, you know, and the income for an average trucker today, truck driver, I've seen statistics for that, is like 40, 50,000 a year. You know, in today's dollars, back in 1980, they were making twice that in today's dollars, the equivalent of $100,000 a year. So in other words, their wages effectively in real terms have been reduced by 50%. Thank you, Jimmy Carter, for deregulating in 1980 the trucking industry. Yeah. So who the hell wants to go into that line of work, truck driving, you know, when the wages are so poor? Yeah. And the cost of, if you're an independent trucker, the cost of running your business is just outrageous. Can't do it. So that's why they got a shortage of truckers. Well, that's part of the supply problem, you see. We got a lot of that going on in the domestic U.S. economy. So it's not just the ports. It's not just China. It's not just the container shipping companies. Oh, by the way, resources like aluminum and metals, industrial commodities have gone through the roof, along with oil. Oil prices, crude oil, up almost $100 a barrel now from 50 not too long ago, and even less than that during 2020. Do we have a shortage of oil in this country? No, we are the largest exporter of oil in the world. We export more than Saudi Arabia because of fracking. Yeah, we have a glut of oil. And then the government, you know, threw 50 million barrels on the market as well. There's no shortage of oil, crude oil, but the prices have gone up. They've doubled. Why is that? Certainly not a supply problem. Okay, we may have a little more demand. The economy opened up, but nothing anywhere near a doubling of demand to cause a doubling of price. No, we got a problem in rising gas and oil and natural gas prices in this country because of monopolies. These corporations have a stranglehold on the market. And they can jack up their prices under the excuse of supply problems, which is what they're doing. Monopolies. They're monopolies. Monopolistic. You see, that's a term in economics, monopolistic, when you got four or five companies controlling a half, two-thirds of the market, and therefore they have all this market power concentration that they can jack up prices when they want. And businesses prefer to make profits by raising prices rather than selling more goods. That's how monopolies operate. You know, cause a supply problem so that you can jack up the price. And that's what they're doing. There's no lack of supply in oil in this country, but the prices at the pump are going up, aren't they? Because they can, because they're monopolies, because they're price gouging us. Same thing going on with meat cutters. You know, meat production did not stop during COVID. They kept those workers going. You know, they were dropping like flies in these factories from COVID, but they kept it going. Yeah, meat production supply did not decline. And we certainly didn't start buying more beef and pork during COVID, if anything less, right? So demand hasn't increased much, but look at the price of meat. 25% increases. Yeah. Hey, just go to your grocery store. Look at the prices, you know. Was there a shortage of meat? Did you ever see less on the shelves? No, just the price went up. People didn't buy more beef. You know, there was not a lack of supply. Well, why did the prices go up 20-25%? Because they can, because you got like four or five big producers, packaging companies, you know, slaughtering companies, meat processing companies in this country. The same thing with the cereal. Cereals, I mean, you know, not just your breakfast stuff, but the breads and bakery goods and so forth. You got several big producers, and they're controlling the market, and they're jacking up prices because they can, because of market concentration. And I can go down the line on that. Oh, look at what's happening with rents. Okay, there's a lot of rents in the economy. Well, you know, we discontinued the rent assistant, and we've got millions of people being thrown out of their rents, and guess why they're being thrown out? So the landlords can raise the prices, which is what they're doing. They're doing it because they can. Price gouging. Oh, what about the utility companies, gas and electric? Well, they're just passing on the doubling and increase in the energy prices. That's what they're doing. Yeah, they're gouging us in turn. Well, they're monopolies. They can do it. You know, your energy companies have a natural government-provided monopoly. There's no competition where you can go and find alternative gas companies or alternative electric companies or water companies. No, they're gouging us too. You know, so if you look at the 7.5% inflation rate, you know, it's concentrated in certain industries. What about the auto industry? Well, new auto prices up 12%. But old used cars up, what, 40%? Is there a shortage of used cars? Is there a greater demand for used cars? Well, the auto companies are hiding behind this, that we got a semiconductor shortage. You know, I'm beginning not to believe that. I think that's, one, an excuse to jack up their prices, which they have, both for new and used cars. That's an excuse. And it's an excuse to get Congress to give them more subsidies. They're saying, we have a shortage of semiconductors. They're made in Taiwan and so forth. So, okay, government says, Biden says, we're going to give you $50 billion to deal with the shortage. It's a subsidy, just like the subsidy given to the airline companies last year. You know, $50 billion given to the airline companies. Or, you know, aircraft manufacturing companies, $50 billion. They were supposed to not lay off their workers. Well, they laid them off anyway and kept the $50 billion. It's just a direct subsidy. You know, they stopped the subsidies, you know, the checks and the unemployment benefits and rent assistance and so forth to the rest of us, but they keep those subsidies going in different forms for the big corporations. Yeah, airlines, $50 billion, auto companies, semiconductors, another $50 billion. And now we got another proposal coming out of Biden and Congress. Right? Oh, we're going to increase competition. That's the solution that we need here to deal with this inflation. Oh, we're going to increase competition. You know, competition means you increase, you know, new companies in the industry enter, they produce more, i.e. supply increases, supply increase, prices go down. That's the phony academic mainstream theory. It's a justification. It's not a real economic analysis. Because, look, you really think they're going to increase competition in food processing or meat packaging or the oil company, oil refinery, and so forth in this country? No way. The barriers to entry, in other words, it's so expensive and so risky that you'll be able to compete that investors don't go there. There's not going to be a new production of new food processing, right? Or new companies in the oil refining business or in the auto industry. No. And even if there were, it takes years to increase, to build a new oil. You know how long it takes to build a new oil refinery? 5 to 10 years. Yeah. How long does it take to produce a new meat processing company, I don't know, but certainly years. This is bullshit. This is academic bullshit. This is economic bullshit. This is Biden bullshit. Competition. It's just an excuse to give another subsidies to more corporations, $50 billion, going through Congress. Oh, we're going to increase competition. No way. Not going to happen. Ah, but that's the by. What do they need to do? They need to slap price controls on these price gougers. That's what they need to do. But this pro-corporate party system, both wings of the corporate party of America, Republicans and Democrats, will never do that. Will never do that. You know, it's not fiscal stimulus that's driving inflation any more than primarily supply chains. Yeah, there's some supply problems here in select industries, but a lot of the big monopolistic concentrated industries and corporations in them are hiding behind the supply chain issue to price gouge. It's mostly price gouging now going on. You know, I referred to those five or six sectors where they don't have a supply or demand real problem that most of the inflation is coming from. It's price gouging. But they're hiding behind, oh, supply chain. You know, that's what the Democrats are hiding behind, supply chain problems. Which, by the way, even the Federal Reserve said aren't going to be corrected. And most business researchers now say, you know, supply chain problem isn't going to go away this year, probably not next year. We probably won't see a relief in the supply chain global problem until 2024. That's what they're saying now. Yeah. So, yeah, there's some supply chain issues here, both global and domestic. But look where the inflation is coming from. It's not those sectors that have a real supply problem. It's got to be price gouging because it certainly isn't demand. Look, you know, when they passed this relief, COVID relief thing here in the spring, You know, the amount of money that was to go into the economy, you know, through checks, unemployment benefits, and so forth. First year, maybe $800 billion. So you break that down quarter by quarter, maybe $200 or $300 billion at the most. Hit the economy last year when all this inflation began to rise, second half of last year. Well, let's say the spending was $300 billion because it cut off, you know, in September. They cut off the unemployment benefits and so forth. So maybe $300 billion. That's generous, hitting the economy, $300 billion. Well, the second half of last year, GDP was $10 trillion. So a couple hundred billion is going to cause 7 to 10% inflation that hit the economy in the second half of last year. That is demand, that it's COVID stimulus related, that's driving inflation. That's what Republicans who want you to believe because they wanted to cut things off, and they did. Cut off fiscal spending for programs for people. But don't forget, they haven't cut it off for businesses. We still have these $50 billion at a time shots of subsidies, you know, for autos and manufacturing and so forth going on, airlines. That's still flowing out there. Yeah. So it, the most, you know, maybe from reopening the economy, a little demand-driven inflation, but certainly not because of the relief programs. Yeah, okay, some supply-side inflation, you know, global chains, that's contributing some for some goods. Some goods, but remember, you know, maybe 5 or 6% of GDP, that's all involved with importing of manufactured goods. Yeah. There's some issue there, supply chain, but it's mostly price gouging. If you look at where it's coming from and those industries and companies that don't have a supply or a demand significant change condition, it's price gouging. But no one's talking about that very much. I think Paul Krugman sort of mentioned it here recently. You know, the liberals tiptoe around it. Robert Reich and some others, they tiptoe around it. They kind of say it, you know, but they don't really hammer it away. And it never really hits the mainstream media very much. You know, what hits the media, depending which media, you know, Fox News says, oh, fiscal spending programs, right? And CNN and MSNBC say, oh, supply chain programs. Supply and demand. Well, it's not all supply and demand. You know, it's capitalist monopolies, concentration. That's the big contributor right now. And will continue so because, you know, it's become embedded psychology that everyone else is raising prices, so let's do it too. And we can. You know, maybe your local restaurant can't. However, I don't know if any of you have gone on to eat in restaurants, but the prices there are up 20% too. Now, to some extent, they've had to give more money to get their low-paid workers back. So they're just jacking it up into prices. Okay, so, you know, inflation is mostly, if you look at the sectors, it's mostly price gouging going on. A little bit of supply chain, domestic and global, and very little demand. Now, in this scenario, the solution of the capitalist is, oh, let's get the Fed to come in, and let's get the Fed to jack up interest rates. That will slow down the economy. Well, that rests on the false notion that if you raise the cost of borrowing, that it will have a significant dampening effect on demand, spending. Oh, okay. Well, how much are you going to have to raise interest rates? The cost of investment, the cost of borrowing is the driver, the assumption is here, of either the consumption or the investing. Well, yeah, if you raise interest rates, it's going to have some effect on certain sectors of the economy, no doubt. What sectors? Well, those that are interest rate sensitive, What are they? Buying automobiles, for example, right? If you got to pay 4% or 5% to buy a car, you're probably not going to buy a car, right? You're going to look to a used car where 4% or 5% on something that's worth half the value of a new car, you know, you might be able to afford the monthly payments. That's why used cars demand is going through the roof, because the cost of new cars are so high because the companies have, auto companies have jacked up their prices 10-20%. Now you're going to have the cost of financing going up as well. So people who need a ride are looking to use cars. Well, that increases some demand. That's true for used cars. And that's going up. Okay. So the Fed will impact the auto industry, yes. You know, I don't know that the auto companies are all that concerned. They're hiding behind semiconductor shortages and getting the government to give them $50 billion. You know, plus they can make the same profits by selling fewer at higher prices. And that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, the auto companies will slow production and sales. Ah, what about housing? Yeah, that's another sector of the economy that is interest rate sensitive. I shouldn't say just housing, residential housing, you know, commercial property, investment, and construction too. What's commercial property? Oh, malls, right? Factory, you know, hotels, resorts, office buildings, so forth. Yeah, raising interest rates, it's already a very weakened sector, you know, is going to dampen commercial property as well as residential as well. Yeah, so the Fed has an effect on those two sectors, manufacturing and construction. How much of GDP are those two sectors? Together, about 20% of GDP. 80% is the service economy. Well, raising interest rates will also affect small business that depend on bank loans in order to continue. You know, big businesses don't depend on bank loans. They don't borrow from banks. They issue corporate bonds or commercial paper and so forth. And they're sitting fat anyway on huge profits. So it won't affect big business very much, which also can go and borrow somewhere else in the world. But it will impact, raising rates will impact small business, will impact autos and housing construction. But the idea is now that the Fed's going to come to the rescue. It's going to jack up interest rates. And that will cut the floor out of rising inflation. Well, will it? Well, it could. It could if they raise rates enough, but if they raise rates too much, too fast, which I think they're planning to do, they will precipitate another recession, a double dip here. Now, in other words, the Fed will take out on demand, consumer demand, by laying off masses of workers in, you know, the auto and the construction and housing and small businesses. They, you know, rates will go up and those companies will have to lay off. That will mean less wage income out there and less consumption. And less consumption will reduce demand to lower prices. Yeah, the Fed can take it out on the backs of consumers, i.e. shake out inflation. That is really a supply and price gouging problem by attacking demand, which isn't. That's what the Fed does, you see. We have an interesting historical parallel. Go back to 1980, 81. What happened? Well, in 1980, we had double-digit inflation. Why? We had an oil price shock in the Middle East. Iran hostages and so forth shut down the Gulf there. And we had a shortage. that the oil companies liked, took advantage of it, jacked up prices even more than the crude prices, crude oil prices. Yeah. And then when it got to the container ships, well, they jacked up the price of crude, you know, added on their inflation. Then they got to the refiners in the U.S. They jacked up the prices. Then it got to the pipeline, oil pipeline people. They jacked up even more. And then it got to your gas station and, you know, they added. That's the way the oil price works, you see. All along the supply chain, they're all adding a little extra profit by raising their prices. And we had significant inflation in the U.S., 10 to 14%. Double digit, about what we got now in terms of real inflation going on. Yeah. So what happened? Oh, Jimmy Carter in 1980 said, let's deregulate trucking. Let's deregulate the airlines and communications, right? And that will increase competition. No, and that will bring down prices. Doesn't it sound just like Biden? This is, you know, Jimmy Carter redux going on. We're going to increase competition, and that will bring down prices. No, it destroyed jobs in the trucking industry, what it did. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, 1980, Jimmy Carter is forced by the capitalists to fire his Fed chairman, and they bring in this guy, Paul Volcker. And immediately, Paul Volcker starts raising interest rates in 1980. And by 1981, interest rates, the Fed policy rate, the basic rate, you know, was 18% interest rate, 18%. They'd raise rates. Well, that shut down, guess what? The auto industry, the construction industry, small businesses, and every other industry that was sensitive to borrowing from banks to get interest. Yeah, shut them down. Mass layoffs occurring. And what we got was the recession of 81, 82, which was the worst recession in terms of the layoffs since 1938. Yeah, very serious recession provoked by high interest rates, engineered by capitalists in this country to shake out the supply side inflation by taking it out on consumer demand. Yeah, it was supply side. It was oil price shock. You know, oil prices that reverberate throughout the whole economy, production on manufacturing side, consumption, as inflation, you know, leads not only to layoffs and a loss of wage income and consumption, but it reduces, you know, real spending by those who still have their job. So, yeah, it worked, 18%, took it out on demand, what was a supply-side problem. You see the parallels then to what we got going on today. It's a repeat. You know, not exactly the same, but similar. The Fed's being called upon to raise interest rates, and it will. It may even have an emergency session before March. It had forecast that it was going to raise it in March, right? But it may have, you know, next week or two, even before March, start raising the rates. Will they be able to raise 18%? No. Will they be able to raise them to 9%? No. Well before 9%, maybe about half of that, you're going to see these interest rates precipitate another recession. You're going to see them start shutting down certain sectors of the economy, production. Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Deja vu, 1981, 82, coming if the Fed increases seven times more than some of that's more than 0.25% to shut down, to cool off supply side, supply chain, price gouging, inflation, by taking it out on the back of consumer demand. Only game in town, according to the capitalists, right? Raise rates. The bankers love higher rates. The banking industry has been complaining the last 2 years that interest rates are too low. Raise the rates so that they can charge more for their interest rates for small business, medium business to borrow from them and keep what they pay you for your savings and checking and CDs near zero. They're not going to raise what they pay you for interest as these rates go up, but they're going to charge their customers more, and they're going to make more profits on what's called net interest, which is the spread between what they pay depositors and what they charge borrowers. They'd like this. Higher interest rates means more profits for them. Now, they've been calling for it for some time now, and now they're going to get it. The Fed's going to do their bidding. And the Fed's going to raise rates, probably aggressively. What will it take to precipitate a 1981-82 type recession? Well, it'll never get to 9%, even half of what it was in 82 in terms of interest rates. You see, when the Fed raises its rates, policy rate, it becomes the benchmark for all other kinds of interest rates charged by the private sector, you know, prime rates and mortgage rates and auto rates, etc. So it's kind of like a leader. And the key is the 10-year bond rate, 10-year treasury bond rate. Yeah, let's go. It's already drifting up in expectation. You see, because interest rates, particularly the longer-term interest rates, aren't determined solely by the supply of money provided by the Fed. It's also demand. And the Fed has no control over the demand for money, just the supply of money. And even the supply of money, it's losing control because it's a global dollar market now. And corporations and, you know, particularly larger ones, they don't have to borrow in the U.S. to get dollars. You know, they can go to other markets and around the world and get dollars. It's a dollarized market, global. So the Fed has limited influence even over supply, but still has some influence over supply, and its actions do impact certain sectors of the economy and not other sectors as much as it used to. So we got this Fed policy as the only game in town coming to do something about inflation. But in doing something, it will do it at the cost of the real economy and jobs and income and wage income. That's what it will do it at. Instead of really addressing supply and gouging. The answer for supply and supply chains is, competition by giving more money to businesses. Competition. We're increased competition. Yeah. That's their solution to the supply problem part of the issue. And of course, they can't do much about the supply chains, global supply chains, you know, global shipping companies, you know, simply don't add more ships and containers. You know, the U.S. can't do anything about that. If China shuts down some of its production to deal with zero COVID policy, can't do anything about that. So there's very little they have control over global supply chains. Oh, they could do something about domestic supply chains. Oh, we got a shortage of truckers. Well, how the hell are you going to get truckers, you know, millions of truckers employed in the short term? You're not. And the only way you're really going to get more truckers is to pay them better. And businesses don't want to do that. So, you know, the problem, you know, with labor supply here domestically is not going to be resolved soon either. That's why the Fed district president of the, you know, forget her name, last week said, oh, this supply problem is going to be with us throughout the rest of this year, for sure. Probably not till next year, 2023, we'll see. Yeah, some easing of it. And even the most optimistic predictions of the supply chain issues by business sources say it will start easing, maybe, in the latter half of this year. So we're going to have inflation for some time here. It's chronic. It's baked into the system now. It's not going away. They're not getting back to 2%. It's going to be more. And whatever they say it is, because of the way they calculate inflation, it's going to be an underestimation of actual inflation. So it's here, and it's going to stay. And it's going to whack workers' incomes, wage incomes. It already is, big time. You know anybody who got a 7 to 10% wage increase here recently? I mean, not even the strikes that labor won here, you know, at the Deere Company, Agricultural Implement Company, or at the bakery strike, you know, did not equal the 7 to 10% first year. They got like 5% first year, 6%. So even the best, the strongest of sectors of working class is 5 or of the labor force. Well, I hope we didn't have a glitch here. I think we may have had a glitch in the communications. Some problem with the internet today, I think. Anyway, I'm just going to continue, assume that we haven't had a problem. Okay, so, the Fed's going to raise rates. It's going to depress demand for what is actually a supply side and price gouging issue. And, you know, just a commentary about consumer price index here needs to be repeated. And that is, you know, when they say 7.5% inflation now, latest CPI report, which is really 10%, they're saying for all the economy, on average, for all the different occupations, on average. But, you know, if you are middle income or below, you're getting whacked even more than 7.5%, 10%. The effect on you is even greater because the CPI, you know, it has about 450 different kinds of products that people buy and services people buy the most. And the ones that are take up a bigger proportion of your income, like lodging or transport or food or energy, have greater weights when they calculate inflation. Now, those weights are for the economy as a whole. But if you're middle class, the weights are too small for what you buy. In other words, you're going to spend more of your income for lodging and food than somebody making $200,000 a year. If you're middle class, you're about $50,000 a year, right? Which means working class. You know, your weights for those big items are greater than the weights for those who make a hell of a lot more money. But it averages out, you know, nationwide to the weights that they give it now on average in the consumer price index, a basket of 450 goods. So the inflation hitting you in the middle class and below is a lot more than 7.5, even more than 10%. And we can see it in consumer sentiment, which is plummeting here. As inflation escalates, it's plummeting. Falling fast, taking a big whack out of wage incomes, and it's going to continue. You know, and when Biden is questioned here in an interview about it, you know, the interviewer said, hey, you know, you said this would be short term, it's still continuing. It kind of you know, hit a sore spot with Biden. And Biden's response was, you're being a wise guy asking me that question. Well, it's not a wise guy to ask why the hell your prediction hasn't come true. And it's not coming true. It's not ending soon. We're going to have inflation for some time, and the Fed is going to attack it with a lot of rate hikes, and that is going to dampen down certain industries, and it may be significant enough to provoke a double-dip recession, as in 1981-82. Well, how high and how fast will Fed rate hikes have to go to provoke a double-dip recession? Well, that's hard to say, but I think it's somewhere around 4%, 4.5% maybe even less, in the 10-year Treasury bond rate, which is a benchmark, influences all other rates. All right, that's the foundation rate, 4%. Well, where is it now? It's at 2% roughly. So if you get 7 rate hikes, a couple of them 50%, you know, within the next 6 to 9 months, you know, you're going to double the 4%, 3.5% to 4%, the 10-year bond rate within 6 to 8 months, you're going to do that. I think that's going to precipitate a contraction in 2023, double-dip recession, you know, probably coming next winter. May come before. That's my prediction, right? We're going to see a deja vu 1981-82 here. If the Fed raises 7 times in the next 6 to 8 months, too much, too fast. Well, why is it only going to take 4% instead of 18%? Because the U.S. and global capitalist economy is far more fragile than it was 40 years ago. Far more fragile, far more financialized. And we can see how fragile it's become in the 2008-10 crash, and thereafter in Europe crash, in China, 2015, right? And now we got the COVID coming right, COVID recession right on the heels of it, both of which, in my opinion, are what we would call great recessions. I'm not going to get into that here. My forthcoming book, The Viral Economy, America's Second Great Recession, will explain why what we've got is a great recession. Another repeat, big contraction, deep, fast contraction of the economy. You see, most recessions are normal historically in the past where, you know, you've had a short contraction here, not very deep, and you can get out of it with policy responses, fiscal monetary policy responses. When you have great recessions, you have deep contractions, and they're protracted contractions. We saw that in 2008-10. Didn't really get out of it until 2015-16. Oh, but the economists are saying, oh, you know, this was the shortest recession on record here. Yeah, we had a deep contraction in 2020 in the second quarter, but it was over by the summer of 2020 because the economy just stopped falling. In other words, we have this oxymoron definition of what a recession is by mainstream economists that says when the economy stops contracting, it's over. Forget about how long it takes you to come back to where you were. You know, that should be the definition of recession. How long does it take you to get back to the level you were before the contraction began? No, no. U.S. government says it's just, you know, when you stop falling. Plus, the U.S. government in 2013 and other economies, too, have redefined GDP and added, you know, at least $500 billion, $500 billion or more, to the definition of what GDP is to make the economy look like it's better than it actually is. But GDP by itself doesn't really explain recessions, let alone its definition of when it's over. Now, so forget about the fact that they say, well, it ended in the summer of last year. It didn't. Ended for who? For the meatpacking companies? For the oil companies? For the auto companies? Yeah, okay, it ended for them pretty quick. What about the bankers? Right. Well, we forget they got $5 trillion of free money from the Federal Reserve starting in March 2020. Yeah, $5 trillion they've gotten. And they didn't even need a bailout this time around. They needed it in 2008-09, but they didn't even need it now. And they got that free money for nothing. And what did they do with that free money? Oh, they loaned it, invested it in what? Stock markets, bond markets, derivative markets. That's where all the money went. That's where we got bubbles in all these financial markets. That's where all the money went. Yeah, the Fed pre-bailed out the bankers. And now the bankers are going to get interest rates hikes and fatten their profits even more. Well, raising interest rates, by the way, is going to have an effect on the global economy, too. How's that? Well, if interest rates go up, the dollar is going to go up. Already going up. And if it goes up, if the dollar rises in value, well, then other currencies decline in value. It's a reciprocal relationship between currencies. The dollar goes up because it's the global currency. Other currencies go down. If other currencies go down, right, you got problems in other emerging markets. And they have to raise their interest rates to prevent a collapse of their currency. But raising their interest rates provokes recessions in their economies as well. So interest rates by the Fed and the rising dollar reverberate throughout the global economy and cause a similar contraction in the real economy. And that's going to happen too. Yeah. So this thing is not just a U.S. thing. This policy shift coming on, you know, no more fiscal policy, no more spending to bail out the people. Although they're going to continue to subsidize and bail out select sectors of corporations and capitalism, you know, that's occurring, as I said, $50 billion here and there. No problem getting those votes through Congress. That's going to continue, you know, the bailouts of businesses and corporation sectors of the economy here and there. Yeah, but the big bailout of the people is over. So fiscal policy is over. They won't do price controls to deal with price gougers. You get phony competition subsidies. But they're relying on the Fed. And as I said, the Fed will do it at the expense of whacking demand to deal with a supply price gouging problem. That's coming. But as it comes, they may overstep, and they may cause a contraction of the real economy that's significant as in 81, 82. And longer term, they're running the risk of precipitating a financial market instability event. Well, how is that? Well, you raise interest rates, you raise the cost of borrowing, real interest rates, I mean, real debt goes up because the cost of financing it goes up. And those sectors of the economy that are already fragile because of the level of debt may default. You may get something similar to what's going on with property developers in China. You may get it here. Not so much in the property sector this time around, but, you know, junk bonds, high-yield junk bonds, corporations that should have gone under because they're not managed or doing well, but they keep themselves afloat because of low interest rates and borrowing at high rates, junk rates, 10%, right? They may finally go under. Junk bond market, junk loan market called, you know, the CLOs. Yeah, same thing, junk loans, junk bonds, junk loans. Municipal bond market, local government could be in trouble. The repo market, repurchase market, could be in trouble. These are all financial asset markets. And who knows about derivatives, because you can't really see what's going on there, interest rate swaps and all that nonsense. Yeah, they could precipitate, probably with a lag of another year from a double-dip recession, you could see a financial instability event. And then the Fed will come in and it'll throw more money at it to bail it out. Now, the Fed is supposed to start, after it raises interest rates, buying back some of the money, the $5 trillion it threw out there, but it's not going to happen. The Fed cannot pull that money back. They tried after 2008-10, did not work. You know, the Fed debt is $9 trillion. The Fed debt, on top of the national debt, which is like $28 trillion now. Yeah, going up. And the interest cost goes up as interest rates rise on that debt. So, you know, the Fed is not going to pull back its balance sheet, contract its balance sheet. That's a lot of talk. Not going to happen. But they're not even going to do that until they raise the interest rates. And then they'll have a recession probably, and then they'll say, oh, we can't do that. That's the cycle, you see. That's how it works. Yeah. That's how it works. So, you know, historically, whenever we've had oil prices that have hit $100 a barrel, it's always been followed by a recession. Historically, why would it not be different this time? Yeah, you go back to 1980, you know, 1990, and then 1991 recession. Go back to 2008. You know, people weren't aware that oil prices went well over $100 billion a barrel, $100 a barrel, excuse me, in the spring of 2008 before the financial crash occurred. No. And now we got the same phenomenon. Oil prices just about at $100 a barrel, going to go higher. So you're going to pay even more at the pump here in 2022. Why would it be different that when you have inflation so high, it always precipitates a recession? Why would it be different this time? It won't be. Going to be the same. And the Fed's going to raise interest rates. No doubt. Question is how high, how fast, and what will the impact be? And will it be enough to precipitate a real contraction of the economy, or at least a stagnation once again? And will that even further out precipitate a financial instability event? That's the scenario in front of us. And the Democrats are pretty damn worried, and they should be, you know? They're going to get their asses kicked in November midterms, you know? And it's all because of Biden policies to a great extent, tepid policies. And the corporations, which control the two parties, blocking any progressive Democrat initiatives. They've succeeded. They've stopped it, you know? It used to be just McConnell stopping it, but now it's the Democrat stopping it. You know, the two parties are just two wings of the corporate party of America. And now they're using Fed policy to deal with the inflation, which will fail. That's it. I'm out of here.